All right, real quick, we're about to get back into the NBA Finals, but I wanted to play more sound from the post-game celebration for Texas softball last night. Obviously, the Longhorns winning their second straight national championship. Tegan Kavan, once again, the hero. Obviously, not the only hero. There's 10, 15, 20 different heroes to go around. Everybody contributed for Texas throughout this run. But here's Tegan Kavan on the field with Holly Rowe of ESPN right after recording the final outs of the Women's College World Series.
Tegan, there's this brilliant moment. You're walking in from the bullpen. You come in and strike three out. What were you doing when you mental performance? What were you doing in those pitches to really come in and lock it down in this crucial time?
I was just telling myself that this is what I dreamed of, and I wanted to have Sid Lolly back because she threw a hell of a game, and so I just want to have her back. My team's back. I love them so much, and I'm just so happy.
You've done something tonight that's never been done in Texas history, a back-to-back championship, but you've done something that's never been done before, back-to-back most outstanding player. How do you wrap your mind around that, Tegan?
Oh, it's hard, but it's a team thing. It's Coach PR. It's Coach White. It's all of our coaches. It's all these girls right here, and I'm just so happy, and I'm so proud to be a Longhorn.
For a little girl whose mom didn't want her to pitch, what do you think mom will have to say tonight?
I think she's just fine with it. Yeah, she's the rock.
You talked about your teammates. You were so emotional after this. I know you guys pick one player to play for every single game. Who were you playing for tonight, Tegan?
I played for Reese Atwood. She deserves to end her career right here in this position, and I love her so much. Yeah,
man. Thank you. Go celebrate with your teammates.
Thank you, Holly.
Yeah, man, they talk about team first. Everything these girls say, they all do. They don't talk about their accolades. They talk about doing stuff for the team and their teammates and wanting to succeed for them first and then me later. I'll get mine if the team wins. So, I mean, it's always refreshing to hear them talk.
Well said. There is no ego with her and no ego with any of them, but she's the best player in the country. And hey, you've just been named most outstanding player for the second straight year. You're the first ever college softball player to do that. Like, what's that like? Shout out to my pitching coach. Shout out to my coach. Shout out to all my teammates. Like, it's a team award. Yeah. It's not about me, and I'm happy to be a Longhorn. Like, that's – said it earlier. She is so easy to root for. This whole team is. But having a superstar like that as your best player, you don't find that in any sport that often. So,
yeah, I mean, talking about doing stuff for Reese Atwood, that's being selfless right there. That's what you're supposed to do as a teammate right there. You'll get yours. You're getting yours, but to talk about others first is always great to hear.
100%. So we'll get back and do some Longhorn softball conversation a little bit later. Texas going back-to-back as national champs. That was one finals, but we've got another finals going on right now. Game two, Spurs and Knicks coming up tonight in San Antonio. You know, we've had plenty of Spurs people on this show, Buck, to talk about this series, but we got to go up to the city. We got to go up to New York behind enemy lines to get a Knicks expert to recap game one, talk game two, and talk all things NBA Finals. Joining us now is Chris Persiainen, who covers the New York Knicks for Clutch Points and Locked On Knicks. Chris, I hope I pronounced your name correctly. Thanks for the time, man. How are you today?
Hey, you nailed it. Good morning. What's going on? And I appreciate you guys having me. It's shared, like you said, the perspective from the Big Apple. Definitely an amazing game one, and I think we got an amazing rest of the series coming up for both teams.
Well, New York City loves its Knicks. I mean, it's been a long time. You know, it's been they're close, they're almost there. How do they get over the threshold? But 12 straight wins right now lets you know that they can do it, Chris, any way you want to play. Right now, the Knicks can. They can be that team of really great individual players, but as a team, they look special right now. You don't get to do this in the NBA with 12 straight wins if you're just an average, just have a couple of good players. You got to be pretty good as a team also.
Yeah, 100%. New York has several star players. They also have several guys that have shown – their abilities to different extents, right? People forget Mikal Bridges did a couple of years residency at Brooklyn, being the number one star player there, putting up over 20 points a game, and you name it. OG Anunoby, if you remember his exit from the Toronto Raptors, a lot of reports about him wanting a bigger role to be more involved in the team's offense. And, you know, the Knicks didn't necessarily afford him a bunch of isolation touches, but What mm-hmm. what they did do is put together an infrastructure, a system that kind of feeds off of itself. And you alluded to this earlier. They put themselves in a situation to be able to have an answer to every kind of question.
Yeah, Chris Persianen joining us here to talk New York Knicks basketball as we approach game two of the NBA Finals. You know, if you're a Knicks fan, Chris, I'm sure this bothered you, but I'm curious if it bothered the guys in that locker room. So much discourse throughout these playoffs that was like, whoever wins the West is winning the NBA Finals. And when we got to that Spurs-Thunder series, the two best teams record-wise in the NBA all season long, it's like, this is the real NBA Finals. Nobody cares what's happening in the East. You think the Knicks coaches and players like heard that? You think they felt a little, annoyed by that? Maybe that added a little more motivation for them to try to prove all of those people wrong? Uh-oh.
I think he may have hit his mute button.
Chris, you got us? I think he's frozen. Is that?
Well, he's talking. I think he's got the mute on, maybe.
Now you're on mute, Chris. It's that New York internet right there. It costs too much money, I guess.
Spectrum in New York?
Spectrum in New York. Chris, you're still on mute. I don't know if you can hear us.
Put up your mute sign. Write big mute on there. Let him see it.
Okay.
There he is.
See if we can get Chris back on. His internet just cut out. Hold on. You're not allowed to tell anybody how to use technology. That's not.
I'm a technical man.
Yeah. People ought to hear the conversations you and I have to try to get you on the show every day.
Yeah. What do I hit here? What do I hit there? Don't touch that. Yeah. I told you it's like the people at Woods Comfort Systems. You don't touch anything. Just leave it like it is.
Yep. All right, we'll see if we can get Chris back on. Hopefully he tries to rejoin us there. I'm curious to hear, I don't know if Knicks players would ever admit that publicly, but they know. It's the biggest farce in sports, and it's every sport, and it's every team, is we don't pay attention to the outside noise. It's like, you're really tweeting a lot. You're really posting on the internet a lot, and wow, you're responding to everything that everybody else on the outside has been saying. So I'm curious as we get Chris back on. Chris, I don't know if you heard my question.
I did. Sorry about that, fellas. I threw the mute button on because I wanted to make sure I wasn't coming through robotic and chopping up what you guys were trying to say. Now, listen, from the Knicks' perspective throughout the season, they were very intentional, and you were kind of touching on it right there, is very intentional about not really caring what was going on the other side of the windshield. They were going to do their best job to drive their car as best as possible. And they know the course well. They know it's long, it's winding, 82 games. And they certainly had some situations where the general public, the viewing public, even the analysts and pundits that cover the league daily looked at them and were like, oh, geez, they are headed straight off the rails. This is over. This team needs to be blown up. This team needs to be this and that. Mike Brown has gotten credit all season from the players, but I think it really wasn't until the end of the year that they realized how valuable it is that Mike just completely adopts this mindset and tries to pretty much enforce it within the team of nothing anyone says matters, whether they're right or wrong. Like, they might be right. They might know exactly what they're talking about, but we're never going to address any of it if that's what we're worried about. Like, we do need to focus on ourselves. We do need this and that. You look at, I go back to 2021 thinking to the Phoenix Suns grabbing a 2-0 lead over the Bucks. And I think it was after that series, Mikal Bridges was the one who said, we're up 2-0 and we're thinking, this is sweet and we got stuff figured out. Mikal Bridges has been the guy throughout this Knicks playoff run who has been like, I want to say close to like unwell with regard to his ability to recount the series scores. You ask him after a Knicks game one win, what he's thinking as well. It's 0-0. And we got to get ready for the next game. Next game is game one. And we got to get ready. I remember the Knicks lost game two to the Atlanta Hawks. This was before they lost game three. Things were very, very testy after that. But when it was 1-1, Mikal Bridges was asked about the series. He said, "We're down 1-1. And he said it so casually that no one in the moment caught it. Afterwards, watching the clip online, it was really easy to realize this guy just said down 1-1. Down 1-1. What? And then cut all the way to after game one of the NBA Finals. I think it was Jenny Fisher. I'm not sure exactly who. Someone with the NBA social media recording Bridges right as he got off the court. Mikal, game one, how do you feel? And he goes, 0-0. So that, to me, I think is an answer to your question in a way. The Knicks have very intentionally made sure to adopt short memories, to enforce short memories. Maybe the Knicks last year, you know, would have gotten a little caught up in some of the noise or whatever. I don't know why or how, because I know it's not like Tom Thibodeau was scrolling Twitter. You know, he was locked in. We know that. But this year's Knicks approach doubt. They approach every game. They approach cheers. They approach all of it the exact same way. None of it affects them. And that was something they said last year. Don't get too high in the highs. Don't get too low in the lows. That's something that Tom Thibodeau taught them, that if they win a championship, they will, you know, need to thank him for. But they'll also be the ones holding the trophy because their hard work executed on it. So lots of factors. But New York ignoring the outside noise has been a huge part of what they do. Of course, they, you know, are looking over at the Western Conference and seeing a 7'5" and seeing the closest thing to MJ since Kobe grab mid-range buckets in his sleep. And they're thinking, okay, we're going to have a tough series against ahead of us no matter what. But they're not even – I can't even tell you that they thought that, because we wouldn't know. They would not let you know. And something that I think really illustrates that, I'll close with this on this point, is Landry Shamet told us reporters that they refused to watch Cleveland or Detroit film as a team until after game four against the 76ers. They were up 3-0. They did not care. They could prepare for the opponent when they had an opponent to prepare for. You know, maybe with all the information swirling around the world right now, teams feel like they kind of owe themselves the chance to learn as much as possible and study up as early as possible. The Knicks didn't want to do anything that, you know, was touching the money, if you want to put it that way. They just wouldn't do it. They wouldn't watch Cavs film. They wouldn't watch Pistons film. I said, no, we're focused on the Sixers right now. And you hear players say that all the time in press conferences, and coaches say the right things, and players are taught to say the right things. And sometimes you can tell when they really mean it. These Knicks don't care if you think they really mean it or not. It's just their ethos. It's just their creed. This is what they live by, and it's why they're where they are.
Well, it's interesting to me, especially, Chris, because I'm 71 years old, so I go way, way back. I go back way even before Earl Monroe and Clyde Frazier. I'm back with DeBuscher and Bradley and Willis Reed. I mean, I can go back that far. And Knicks have always had numerous leaders, but Brunson, if they get this done, he will be one of the all-time three best Knicks ever to play for the New York Knickerbockers. He is a dog, a 6'2" dog that plays like he's 7 feet tall, and he refuses to give in and to give up. And he looks like the guy that on a consistent basis, every game he is going to be there, whether it's, I mean, they call him a liability on defense, but what he does to his team and how he elevates those around him, you know, Hart and Bridges and some of these guys, I got to give him an awful lot of credit. I got to believe if you just watch that guy practice, he practices the same way he plays the games.
And he'll tell you Josh Hart doesn't. But that's part of the magic, right? Is that, you know, Brunson is the coach's son. Hart makes fun of him. You know, so someone sent into their podcast, Josh, can you do a Jalen impersonation? And Josh like pushes up glasses that he's not wearing. And he goes, guys, if we want to win, coach is right. It's on us. And you know, he's just like, this is the worst, you know, they are, but they're best friends. And so that's a start of it, right? Is yeah. You talk about how Jalen elevates these other guys. Well, he's been playing with Josh and Mikhail for years now. So these guys have not just done it. They've won together. Right. And again, they'll let you know that Josh wasn't there both times, but Jalen and Mikhail at least won twice national championships. You talk about Jalen Brunson's place in Knicks Pantheonia. An NBA championship would, to me, I just wrote about this yesterday, lock him into that top three. I know Ewing never won one, but the guy in red, that black cat was all right. So, you know, I'm born in 02. I'm 24 years old. I do not go as far back as Frazier. I don't even go as far back as Ewing. But I do recognize that those two guys are the pillars, right? Yes. Like Jalen Brunson goes and wins an NBA championship. He did it with the weight of a 53-year drought. He did it with the weight of 27 years since the last appearance. I think Clyde Frazier is one of the more underrated NBA legends by any fan base ever. I think he was SGA before SGA, that slithery snake game within the mid-range, and then literal snake outfits off the court. I think those two guys had a lot in common and have a lot in common, but how many teams were in the league? I'm going to sound really young here, but like how many teams were in the league in 71 and 70? Like for Brunson to have a 53-year heavy a drought and be the guy to get those sprinklers on, that'd be really impressive. Something I'm interested in, and I talked about this yesterday, you'll appreciate this, but Springfield, I think, starts becoming part of the conversation. And you go, oh, this guy had a late career breakout. Right. But we know very well, we talk about this because of UCLA and some of their greats, right?
Sure.
It's outside of NBA that counts as well for Springfield. How about consensus National Player of the Year, consensus All-Americans, two-time NCAA champion, Bob Cousy Award winner, three-time All-NBA, three-time NBA All-Star, NBA Cup MVP. You want the league wants to make that matter. They should act like it. You know, Eastern Conference Finals MVP. You add in champion. All of a sudden, whether you like it or not, the guy has a resume that, like, rivals some people in the Hall of Fame. I'm not saying
Lou Alcindor coming out of New York, you know, out of Power Memorial. Yeah, it's just he has that from the beginning, from high school on.
They don't need to helicopter him directly from the final stage to Massachusetts. I think, you know, he could keep playing his career and he has some more stuff to prove and this and that. Sure. But the point of this Knicks core is that they're all 30. None of these guys are on the way out. And that means that they have some time left to go and do some damage. But like we were talking about earlier, we'll stay focused on the opponent in front of us right now. And I think the Spurs, frankly, I think they can win game two. And speaking of Brunson, they're going to make him kind of pivot and adjust in this game. So we can get into that as well, because I think game two is going to be the Empire Strikes Back for Wemby. I know he's a Star Wars guy. So there you go.
Well done. Yeah, Chris Persianen joining us here. He covers the New York Knicks for Clutch Points and Locked On Knicks. Well, we'll go right there, right? Game two tonight. Maybe not just game two in a vacuum, kind of looking ahead to the remainder of this series. What are the big keys? I mean, I think the Spurs are going to be on a mission tonight. I think they're going to bounce back. You're going to see a different group. They're going to play desperate because they know how important this game is. But what are some keys really for both teams moving forward as these finals play out, Chris?
Yeah, it starts tonight in game two with what the Spurs already told us. De'Aaron Fox said after practice on Thursday, anybody but Jalen Brunson. So, okay, if that's the pivot, if that's the Spurs' defensive pivot, the Knicks don't need to, you know, be caught in headlights. They can work on this. They've seen this before. Game two of the Eastern Conference Finals against the Cleveland Cavaliers. Game one ended with Brunson putting James Harden on a skewer, frankly. And the Cavaliers said, let's not do that again. Yeah. Game two, they came out, they said anyone but Brunson. Jalen did something the Knicks have been making a habit of this postseason, which is kind of taking a narrative and balling it up and chewing it and spitting it out. Dropped 14 assists, a playoff career high. So, oh, Karl Anthony Towns, you can't defend. Well, Karl Anthony Towns, you know, playmaking. Well, Josh Hart, shooting. Well, yeah. Brunson is a ball hog. He's not a passer. He's a small guard. He wants to be Allen Iverson. He thinks he's so cool. 14 assists, career high for him in the playoffs. And Josh Hart, 26 points to match. So tonight, the Spurs are going to shift the onus offensively onto the rest of the Knicks. And I do think this is going to be an opportunity for San Antonio to capitalize. So for the Spurs, it seems simple, but and I know I'm young and inexperienced too, but as a relatively young and inexperienced team, the Spurs have to try and take note of that 0-0 mentality the Knicks have. The Spurs have to come out in game two. You know, people and New Yorkers, we are piranhas, so anything you give us, we'll find a way to eat it up. Wemby being like, I wasn't impressed by anything the Knicks did, and oh, there's nothing strategically that we need to change, and all those quotes that he gave, it's like, I feel the same way about those that I felt about Kenny Atkinson saying they were analytically up 2-1. I actually like it. I actually like that mindset. I like the mentality of, ah, come on, guys, a couple bounces of the ball, it's different, because I'll tell you guys right now, I think to SpongeBob, first, which is ridiculous, but if you let me, this guy has failed his driving test 20,000 times. Every single time he goes in to take it again, he knows before he picks that pencil up that he is not, he knows before he touches that steering wheel that he is not, it's not going to happen for him. And so, yeah, of course he drives into a lamppost. Of course he flips the boat over and sends Miss Puff off a cliff. Like, he's not ready for prime time. You know, you get him in front of that grill, it's a different story, but behind that wheel, it's a literal wreck. And the Spurs need to do the Knicks thing of just, no matter where you are, close your eyes and see that grill, right? See that grill, because if you even realize you're behind the wheel of a car, you're going to crash. The Spurs can learn from the Knicks. The Knicks came out like up 30 after halftime, game one against the Philadelphia 76ers, and they played like it was the tip-off. Like, okay, guys, feel them out. Let's see how they defend. Let's probe the coverage first, have OG cut. Okay, now we know they're dropping. Now we know this and that. They did it like it was 0-0. So Spurs need to do that. And one of the ways they're going to do it is by progressing to their next coverage. That'll put Brunson in a tough spot. He'll probably be fine. But he will have the ability to feed those tough spots to the rest of the Knicks. We'll see, right? It's no indictment on Josh Hart if he goes 2 of 8. From three-point land in game two and the Knicks lose by 4 points. I don't think that makes him a bad player. It just means now game three, New York will have some things to work on, using Hart as a screener more, this and that. But I don't see why the Spurs can't lift a game off him, especially with all the pressure that they're about to put on a bunch of guys. OG Anunoby has been to the finals, but he didn't play. Mikhail's been there and played. Josh never been there. Carl never been there. So, no, yeah, Brunson's built for all these moments, but the Spurs are about to make six other guys prove it too. And I can see them winning game two by, you know, a double-digit margin as a result.
Yeah, I mean, all the things you're saying are true. And the one thing that the separator is, their young coach has to make some decisions that you know, when in a 4-point, 3-point, 1-point game or up by 14, you can be the decisive guy to make the point of what we're going to do to keep a 14-point lead, make it 20 points instead of a dogfight in the end where your team ends up losing by 10. That guy's you talked about Mike Brown, and he's been an assistant coach. He's been in championship playoff games and stuff. And quite frankly, the Spurs have a young guy that's feeling his way around. And with a superstar that's letting his superstar go out there at 30 feet playing around with Karl Anthony Towns with his back to the rim, and everybody else like Josh Hart getting 15 rebounds. Those are these little simple things that it sounds like you're talking about that the Spurs need to take care of. They should take care of those type of things. Is their young coach going to make that move tonight, or are they going to go down two games?
I'm interested. You know, you said tough decisions. I think the guards are where the toughest Fox decisions lie, because De'Aaron Fox, and maybe, right, I'm not inside his X-rays, but maybe it's a no fault of his own because of an injury, has been tough. I almost just want to pull it up on my phone. I know that we want to be friendly for an audio format, but there's a screenshot from game one of Fox. I'll describe it to you guys instead. De'Aaron Fox is at the free throw line, a step in. Okay. Victor Wembanyama wide open on the right wing, calling for the ball. Stephon Castle under the basket, wide open, calling for the ball. Julian Champagny wide open left corner, not calling for the ball, sulking because he knows he's not going to get it. I don't even know who this is on the Spurs. The fifth player is cut off of this screenshot, but they're wide open on the left wing. All five Knicks are converged on Fox, who's at the free throw line. OG Anunoby fell over, which is why Wembanyama is so wide open. Mikal Bridges isn't doing anything. Brunson's just like keeping in defensive stance. Hart is running over to contest. Towns is just standing there. And now, you know, you guys can laugh. I'll show you quick this image. Fox could have made a couple of different passes here, a couple of different reads.
Yeah.
This was effectively a turnover for the Spurs. Missed mid-range jumper, and there's that. So I just, you know, what's going on there? Why is a rookie processing the game better right now? Is it that Mike Brown knows Fox better than any other coach in the league and knows the exact coverages that can give him a tough time? And he doesn't have as much film on the kid who's gotten NBA pops, who grew up learning all the, like, you know, you don't know what it is, right? But that's a tough decision. And another one, Wembanyama, you know, you talk about post scoring for him, balancing that with his other duties as a center and a defensive anchor. I do think the Spurs have a great coach in Mitch Johnson. Part of the reason why I think that is a little bit of like confirmation bias. I think the fact that they didn't really hold a public coaching search and they were so confident that he was their guy. To me, I maybe some fans were frustrated by that, feeling like there wasn't really like a due process. But for me, I felt like the due process happened. It was just behind the scenes. And he's someone who they're really excited about, and so much so that they want to give him this job right now and not lose him. And oh, you see like Sweeney going and grabbing another job, right? So I do think Mitch is the guy, and frankly, it's because people much more winningy than myself have come to that determination on their own. But these are the moments that are right, going to kind of define him, and I would go as far as to say, you know, if the Spurs stick with him and he learns from this in the right ways, whether they win or lose this series, I bet you 10, 12, 14 years from now, if he's still coaching this team specifically, he will bring this series up as a kind of a pivotal point for him, where he learned that, yes, you can get away with a lot when you have someone that's 7'5", but when the margin for error is non-existent at a very high level, you really do just need to prioritize winning. You know, I don't think anyone would look back at the Knicks NBA Cup victory over the Spurs and be like, Mitch just didn't want to win that one. You know, but in a 7-game playoff series, it's different, because in the regular season, it's a little bit like, look what I can do. And if you are good, you're good. In the playoffs, it's more about, what are you bad at? I'm going to make you do only that for 48 minutes on national television. And if you can't handle it, you're going to lose. The playoffs are much more rude. And for Mitch, I think that is what is what's missing, is the quick adjustment to that. So is it his first time coaching in the NBA Finals? Yeah. So that's okay. But how quick will he be to adopt the rudeness of the NBA playoffs? Because it's not, you're not a bad person for wanting your team to win. In fact, if you want to say what's going to get the fan base on your case, it's not making the tough decisions. So I know as a coach, you have a lot to manage, and coaching in sports right now is more of a CEO job than it's ever been, given the amount of information that the data departments have. The on-court, field, et cetera, decisions are kind of less in their hands than ever. The management of these players and relationships and personnel more important than ever. this is going to test Mitch Johnson. I believe he'll come out on top. I think even by game 3-4 of the series, when they go to Madison Square Garden, you'll see the Spurs trying a different thing or two. I just also think part of their ethos has been like, we're really good. We trust ourselves. If we do start scrambling, what message does that send? Not that they care what people think, but internally, what does it send?
Yeah, you know, sure.
Your boss tells you you're doing a great job, but they just happen to want to reassign you to a much smaller role. What are you going to think really happened? You're going to think you didn't do that great of a job. So, you know, Mitch has got to be honest with these guys.
Yeah. Chris, great stuff, man. Really appreciate your time. Well done on the SpongeBob reference, too. I would say good luck to the Knicks, but I don't mean it. But we do really, really appreciate you joining us today, man.
Absolutely. Thank you, Chris. Hey, thanks for having me. It was a really pleasant conversation with y'all. And I hope I represented the city up here well. I'm technically from New Jersey, but you know, it's all a mirage. It's this tri-state area is what it is. We definitely spend a lot of the year acting like everything we do is the most important thing on the planet. So I'm glad for these couple of weeks you guys can join us and in knowing that what we're doing is the most important thing on the planet. Wemby versus New York City, what's better than that? And we might just get a Hall of Famer born out of the fires of this, or the start of a terrifying 15-year reign that I'll have the pleasure of seeing. So I'm excited either way, fellas. Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate
the time. Chris.
Thank you, Chris. Man. There he goes. Chris Persianen, New York Knicks beat reporter, joining us to talk some NBA finals. All right, we're about to go from guest to guest. So much going on in the sports world. One of those things is happening right here in Austin. Texas hosting the Austin Super Regional against Oregon tomorrow. Game one of that best of three series will begin at the Dish. Before we get into a little Longhorn baseball conversation with the guy who covers Oregon, how about another round of sponsor shout outs, Buck?
So our good friends over at Hat Creek Burger Company. You went to Hat Creek, I think, yesterday. Did you have your burger yesterday, buddy?
I did. Got me a Southwest burger and some fries.
Good job. Good job. And they've got it all right there. Hat Creek Burger Place with good food, good folks, and a lot of good fun. It's just that simple. It's proud to be a place where you can come in hungry and leave full for sure. Hat Creek Burger has over 30 locations in the state of Texas, born and bred right here in Austin, Texas. You know me, I love the milkshakes at Hat Creek Burger, the strawberry milkshakes, of course, with the whipped cream and cherry. Love those fries. Love those nuggies, as a matter of fact, too. But I'm all about the Big Hat now, and hopefully you had your share of fries, too. I hope you didn't just have a burger without fries.
I said I had fries.
Did you get a burger without fries?
What am I, a communist?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I'm thinking you didn't have those special fries that you like over there, though, right?
Oh no, I just went with the OG fries. They've got the queso fries, which are very good, but I just went regular fries yesterday.
I'm glad you got your fill, because folks at Hat Creek Burger, mom and dad, if you want to go there and get yourself a margarita late in the afternoon, take the kids over to the playscape. You stay off the playscape with your margaritas, but you can have just that at Hat Creek Burger. I love Hat Creek Burger Company. I have not hit it this week. I am going to get there probably tomorrow on Saturday. When all the kids are there, when the neighborhood kids are at Hat Creek Burger, I'm going.
That's creepy.
No, I'm not buying them food.
Well, it's creepy that you're there. Oh, when are the most kids going to be around? Yeah, that's when I'm going to go.
That is kind of creepy. I'm a grandfather. I'm not a creepy old man. I'm just a grandpa.
No, you can be a grandpa and a creep, but that's okay. That's okay. HatCreekBurgers.com to find a location near you and to place an online order. Shout out to Qualis Roofing and Construction as well. We've had a lot of rain. We've got more rain coming up, and I keep saying it, and I keep meaning it. It's not just hail that can hurt your roof. Rain, high winds, flying debris. We've had all sorts of those things recently around Central Texas. If you want to make sure your roof is okay, reach out to Qualis. They'll come out to your place for free. There is zero risk involved. You want peace of mind. You want comfort. You want to know that your roof is protecting you and your family. Call our friends at Qualis Roofing and Construction. They've been around and they are going to stay around. Tons of five-star reviews online. They do residential and commercial roofing. Nobody does it better. 512-257-0033. That's the number. If you call them, they're going to hook you up with a free Longhorns t-shirt as well. And again, free roof inspection. That's the name of the game. They will come out to your place for zero charge and give you that peace of mind that you are looking for. QualisGC.com. Again, it might not just be a leak. There could be a stain on your roof. There could be something happening. The shingles could be damaged. Make sure your roof is good to go with our friends at Qualis Roofing and Construction.
Yes.
All right. What a loaded show. We need more than 2 hours to get to everything that we wanted to get to today. But let's talk a little Texas baseball, shall we? The Super Regional round of the NCAA baseball tournament gets going today. You've got four series that start today and four more that start tomorrow. And one of the ones that will start tomorrow is the one right here in Austin. The 6th seed Texas Longhorns playing host to the 11th seed Oregon Ducks. The first ever meeting on the diamond between Texas and Oregon. And joining us now to preview this series is Logan Brown, who covers Oregon for Ducks Wire. Logan, we appreciate the time, man. Thank you so much. How are you today?
Good, guys. Appreciate you guys having me on. Ready to kick off a great series tomorrow night.
Yeah, absolutely. We are too. Well, tell us a little bit about this Oregon team, Logan. In the Big Ten, still feels weird to say, but Oregon, second place in the Big Ten this year, second place in the Big Ten conference tournament behind UCLA. I'm sure y'all love that UCLA is already out of this thing. And then sweeping through the Eugene Regional. Just your thoughts on this Oregon baseball program and how they were able to make it this far into the tournament.
Well, I think if you asked Oregon fans, UCLA was kind of the boogeyman that they just couldn't get over. And in the Big Ten championship, blew it in the 9th inning, had them on the ropes and blew it in the 9th. And then in Los Angeles a couple of weeks ago, had them in the 8th inning, and then Dean West hit a grand slam, and the whole narrative for Oregon against UCLA kind of turned on a dime. But when I think people think about Oregon right now, they think about the power at the plate. But this past series was all about the starting pitching. Only allowed 3 runs all weekend. And it's led by Will Sanford, who's probably going to go tomorrow night, I would assume, against Dylan Volantis. And then we'll see what happens from there. Oregon's kind of mixed and matched the rotation a little bit this year. But Wasikowski's not afraid to go power for power. So he's probably going to line up the best guy against Texas's best guy and then see what happens. And then Cal Scolari's been incredible down the stretch. He's getting some MLB buzz now. And then Miles Costola has been a revelation. Went from the midweek starter. Now he's the Sunday guy. Just an awesome season from him. And I think the Ducks feel very confident. Whoever they need to roll out in any game, it should be interesting.
You know, Logan, when you talk about your team, tell us a little bit about the defense. I mean, Big Ten baseball, pitching, yes, defense. How are you defensively?
Ducks are very sound defensively, especially up the middle. Maddox Maloney at shortstop is a local kid to Eugene. Grew up 10 minutes outside of PK Park. One of the better defensive shortstops you'll see in the country. He's got incredible range, a great arm. And then Ryan Cooney at second base has played just about everywhere. He's played shortstop, third. He's playing second base now. Only playing second base now because Maddox Maloney is that good at shortstop. And then Drew Smith plays incredible defense from the hot corner. You're not going to get much by him. First base has been kind of a revolving door. Right now it's Braden Jaxta who's in there. He's a freshman in there for his bat. Mainly plays catcher. But right now they need his bat in the lineup. He's hitting third or fourth for them every night. And Jaxta's a big dude. You're not going to miss unless you're throwing it 10 feet over his head into the dugout. It's pretty hard to miss him. And in the outfield, you got Jack Brooks, who plays a dynamic center field. Angelia is freshman who's a little bit on the slower end. They're usually sub him for a defensive replacement late in games. And then Ducks just this past regional got back Jax Jimenez, who'd been playing the field, hadn't been hitting for about a month. He had a thumb injury. He's good to go now. Ducks are going to feel pretty good about whoever's there. And then behind the plate, Berkeley Mabius is a Buster Posey Award semifinalist. I know Texas is pretty aggressive on the bases. It's going to be probably a little bit tougher against Mabius. He's great at controlling the running game, and he's always up and down the line. So if the Longhorns are going to run on him, it's kind of at your own risk. He's got a great arm, but we'll see what happens.
Logan Brown from Ducks Wire joining us here to preview the Austin Super Regional. Well, you talked about the Ducks pitching, and you brought up the name Will Sanford coming off of an incredible performance in the 1-0 game last weekend against Washington State. 6 1/3 scoreless innings, gave up just one hit, I believe 14 strikeouts against a pretty solid Washington State team. You brought up Dylan Volantis. Longhorn fans obviously confident whenever he takes the bump, but tell us about Will Sanford. What's made him so good all season long, and when he's at his best, what is he doing well?
Yeah, you mentioned 14 strikeouts against Washington State. That's a new career high for him. And then against Nebraska, I believe he had 9 in that game, and he's just cruising right now. It's his big fastball that's going to show up to people, and he lives up in the zone. He's not afraid to pound the strike zone and let you swing away at it. But his big fastball, and then he's got a big curveball that'll drop down later in the game. He usually works that in around the third or fourth inning. But you're going to get plenty of high fastballs. He's going to come straight at hitters. And then the biggest thing you'll notice this weekend, that Dish is probably going to be a pretty rowdy crowd, I'd suppose. Yep. He feeds into that. He loves it. 13,000 fans in Omaha when they played Nebraska, and it was about as hostile as it gets, and he shoved. And you'll see his body language. He loves it. There's nothing more that he loves in the big moment. In years past, I wrote a story about this a couple of days ago, that 2 years ago, Oregon went to Texas A&M against Jim Schwarzenegger's team, and they were a bit stunned playing in front of a SEC crazy crowd, and they admitted that this week. Sanford wasn't on that team, but Maloney and Brian Cooney and all these, Drew Smith was there, and they all admitted we kind of weren't ready for that. And it was competitive for a little bit, but then as mistakes kind of snowballed in that game, it got out of hand. This is a completely different team. Yep. They're a lot more battle tested. They've hung with the USC's and the UCLA's of the world. And the Big Ten's not all the glitz and glamour that the SEC might be, but the Big Ten is better because of those West Coast programs now. In USC, UCLA, and then Nebraska as well. It's definitely a different environment for the Ducks team going down to Texas again, but Sanford is the perfect guy to lead that rotation if they want to throw him tomorrow night.
Tell them they won't have to worry about the bubbles. There won't be any bubbles in the stadium. So the hostile bubbles of College Station won't be here. So there'll be a lot of other things, but not the bubbles, at least.
No. Yeah.
And the Aggies won't be playing this weekend either, too, Logan. I think both of us are happy about that, right?
Oh, no.
Yeah, we'll take it.
No, not this weekend. But, I mean, Sanford did this. I mean, there's bubbles at PK Park sometimes. And he didn't seem to mind at PK Park. So
there you go.
In front of Washington State. So, yeah, he's about the most calm, collected guy that you want on the mound to start a big series against an ace like Volantis.
Yeah, Logan Brown of Ducks Wire joining us here to preview Texas and Oregon on the diamond. Well, tell us about the Ducks bullpen, Logan. I mean, often when you get to this round of the NCAA baseball tournament, it comes down to which team can get outs later in the game. Tanner Bradley's very, very good. Devin Bell. Feels like the Ducks are pretty top heavy, but tell us about some of their back end guys. And do you feel like that's the strength of this Oregon team that Texas is going to have to deal with?
Yeah, I think the back end is a strength. You mentioned Tanner Bradley's up for stopper of the year now. He's usually been their setup guy. He'll come in the seventh or eighth inning and just kind of set it up. And then Devin Bell, who is a Western Oregon starter, transferred to Oregon, has been lights out as the closer this year with a blip against UCLA, which people will always bring up. But he's all strikeout stuff. I think he has 16 strikeouts in his last two or three appearances. And he can go the distance if you need him to pick up the last 6 or 9 outs of the game. He can come in and do it for you. It's not a spot he's inexperienced in. And then as for other guys in the bullpen, lefty Toby Twist has been really great lately. That's kind of been Wasikowski's go-to from the left side. He had a great outing against Yale, which is Ivy League, who cares, but he's battled a lot of injuries, and this has been his first full year back, and he has a bunch of great breaking stuff, especially dealing two right-handers. He's got a nice slider that rides inside. And then I think another guy you'll learn this weekend is Jonah Barkov, who didn't really play much until late in the season and suddenly has kind of become a guy for Wasikowski to go to in a tough spot. Oregon's got some veteran guys in the bullpen who haven't pitched a ton in the past, and Jonah Barkov's a freshman who's just come in and dealt right away. And I don't think Wasikowski's going to be afraid to throw him in there in a spot with a runner on and one out if he needs to. But he's definitely going to ride the rotation as long as he can, because I don't think he wants to dive too deep into the bullpen this week, especially given how the schedule is shifting, playing on a Saturday to start the series. But I think if he does have to go in there for the last four or five innings, they're in a good spot.
And everybody's relatively healthy. It's that time of the year where in football they would tell you, well, nobody's healthy now, but looking around college baseball, it seems like everybody's kind of reaching the point of, you know, it's been a long season, but we seem to be okay. Not a lot of major things going on.
No, so the Ducks have been without two big starters all year, pretty much. Ryan Featherston was injured at the start of the year, came back, and then hasn't pitched since. And then Ian Umlaut has not pitched this year. They were both expected to be weekend guys, or even in the midweek. And then without them, that's kind of allowed guys like Scolari and Gastola to rise. But if anything, those are two experienced guys that the Ducks will be missing this weekend. But other than that, fully healthy, ready to go. The guys at the plate are back healthy now, which has been huge. Jack Jimenez was a huge lift to get them back. He puts together some of the most professional at-bats on the team and hit second for most of the year. He came back in the regional, hit eighth, and was kind of a table setter for the top of the lineup. So it's huge, huge for Oregon to have him back in a bigger role.
All right. Last thing, Logan, before we let you go, the dreaded prediction question. Right. I mean, Oregon trying to get to Omaha for just the second time in school history and the first time since 1954. It's been a special season for the Ducks. You think they can come into Austin and take two of three? How do you see this thing playing out?
Well, I'm not going to make many friends here. I would say the Ducks are going to win in three, but I think it really depends on how quickly they can get to the Texas bullpen. That's no shot against the Longhorns bullpen at all. It's just they've got three premier starters, just like Oregon. I think with Volantis, if you take a loss there, you're kind of not going to be too upset about it. But I think against guys like Luke Harrison and then Rojas, who I know has been dealing with some stuff and looked great this past weekend, but you don't know. You can kind of get to him a little bit. I think he's the most gettable guy in the Texas rotation right now. I think depending on what happens in game one, if Texas wins and then maybe they try to slide Rojas into the second game to as kind of a buffer. I think that it's interesting how the starting pitching will line up, but I think getting to the bullpen is huge. Oregon has shown a lot of power late in games, especially from the freshmen. Angel Laya, Nalivu Lawaki, Braden Jackson have all really connected and come through with big hits late in games to either retake the lead or ice it. Lawaki, I don't know why people throw him hanging curveballs anymore, but he put two in the parking lot in the regional. That kid's kind of a freak. And then you've got guys who, like Ryan Cooney, when he comes up, you're kind of expecting him, whether it's a walk or a hit, you're expecting him to get on base and set the table for everybody. Jack Brooks is a second leadoff guy at the bottom of the order. He's been great recently. And I think for as much as Oregon strikes out and doesn't walk, they're going to hit you as well. So I think as long as they're not pulling their starters too early, the Ducks have a great chance. I think maybe a little overlooked. I think Texas and Oregon are very similar in a lot of regards. I think Texas has more top-end talent in the lineup. With you talk about Tinney and Pack and Aiden Robbins, who have been incredible in the regionals. So I think right now, if you're going to take lineup for lineup, I'd probably take Texas. But I think Oregon has a chance to get to the bullpen and do damage late in games. And then if they're really not afraid of this environment like they say they are, I think it's going to shape up to be a great weekend that could come down to three games and finish out on Monday. And then I think this is kind of a proving stage for Oregon as well. I mean, you mentioned having been to a World Series since 1954, when the format was all different. Yep. And it's kind of a proving ground. If you beat the team that's been to Omaha more than anybody else, maybe Oregon is a destination program for some guys. Wasikowski mentioned this week that Oregon recruited Anthony Pack very hard and just missed out on him because Texas is an allured program. So I think if there's a lot more in line than Omaha this week, but I think Oregon is going in with the right mindset, and they're more battle tested than they have been in years past in this spot. So I think this is something that they can absolutely do.
Well, we'll see what happens. Logan, great stuff, man. Really appreciate the time. Enjoy the college baseball this weekend. And yeah, thanks again for joining us.
Thank you, Logan.
Pleasure, guys. Thank you.
Yep. There he goes. Logan Brown covers Oregon for Ducks Wire. Definitely check out that website and follow Logan on social media as well. Game one of the best of three tomorrow night at UFCU Dish Falk Field, 7 o'clock in prime time under the lights. ESPN is sending its number one broadcast team this weekend. So this is on paper one of, if not the very best super regional matchup. So many upsets around the country last weekend. I mean, you've got, you know, Cal Poly traveling to Morgantown to play West Virginia. You got Little Rock and Troy playing each other, Buck. One of those teams is guaranteed a spot in the College World Series. You've got some interesting matchups because of all of the craziness in weekend one, but the Longhorns swept their regional that they hosted. The Ducks swept their regional that they hosted. So you get a really, really tantalizing matchup here at the Dish.
Yeah, if Valanches can win that game Saturday, I think they can go ahead and get rid of this group in two games.
Yeah, that's the stat. I mean, it's similar to what Texas softball just had in the best of three. Like, the game one winner goes on to win the finals 80% of the time. That's kind of what it is for super regionals and college baseball too. So game one, massively important. Look, you're playing at home. You'd still like your chances with Luke Harrison and Ruger Riojas, but you know, game one's hugely important. You don't want to lose with Dylan Volantis on the bump. You want to set the tone tomorrow night. And hopefully Texas can find a way to get that done. Should be some raucous crowds. I think Oregon's going to bring some fans down here, but you know, the Burnt Orange faithful will pack the Dish. Hopefully it's just two. You know, Texas softball didn't need three. Hopefully Texas baseball doesn't need three either. We don't need that stress of a
win. No, no, thank you. No Sunday, Monday games. No, thanks. Get over. The Ducks will be okay with this weather though, with all this water.
It's hot and humid though. They're not used to that.
They're not like that at nighttime. Yuck.
They are used to rains and rain delays, but it will still be pretty sticky and pretty hot around these parts. So hopefully these games can go off without a hitch. And you are guaranteed to play on Sunday, but you are not guaranteed to have to play on Monday. So let's wrap this thing up this weekend. All right, we'll take your thoughts. The Coda text line, 512-222-9328. We'll get to the BBK news here in a moment. Jam-packed show today. We'll wrap it up with some fun stories and also a request for CDC because people don't ask that dude for enough. But before we get to what we've got left, how about another round of sponsor shout-outs?
You got them all. We got them all, BK.
All right, well, I guess it's my turn then to
four in a row.
Give some love to Early Bird CBD.
Yes, indeed, brother.
Hey, talk about these guys for a second, Buck.
I'm still going strong. I'll tell you that right now. I took those on Tuesday. Still going strong with no aches, no pains from a warm day and a long round of golf and walking around a lot. Thought my knees would be humming, you know, the day after. It hasn't happened since I've started taking those the day after. But I would think 2 or 3 days into it, I feel some soreness. I've got none. It's now back to my normal regular way of life with my knees. So I'm happy I'm taking those. I take the gummies. The drops have been just as good as the gummies for me. I take them for pain only. My head is loose enough. I I'm walking around like I've had a couple bottles of wine, a couple glasses of wine.
Whoa, a couple bottles. Hang on. You won't be walking around if you have a couple of bottles of wine.
Yeah, so I use them for pain, and they do a great job of pain. For those that are suffering from, you know, the weekend pains of just being out in the yard or whatever, or playing around the golf or doing some weightlifting or whatever, you should try those out. They are fantastic, folks.
Oh, yeah. I'll be popping an early bird gummy tonight before posted up on my couch watching some college.
There you go.
In the NBA finals for sure. And I love this. When you open, like for the first time, you've got this little seal and it says good things inside. I don't have the autofocus on my camera, but that's exactly what it is. Good things inside. Good feels, good vibes. It's a local company that makes products designed to make you feel good. So if you're like the buck, pain relief, take them. If you're like me, just want to relax and unwind after an easy week. I mean, a hard week's work. Y'all work hard. I don't work hard. Early Bird CBD, get you some. Earlybirdcbd.com is their website. Promo code Bucky, 20% off your first purchase. They've Sweet. Got you covered. Speaking of unwinding, with my Early Bird, I'm going to have an Alstead beer or two.
Of course you are, or six.
Yeah, a lot of sports happening. It's another weekend. They messed up. They let us get to Friday. Congratulations, you made it to the end of another long week here in Central Texas. You know, the week after a holiday always feels like a long week. That's what it was this week. Get you some Altstadt beer to ring in the weekend the best way possible. Brewed locally in Fredericksburg. They've got a bunch of different brews, something for every beer drinker out there. And I'm telling y'all, one sip and you won't go back to the other beers you've been drinking in the past. It's the only beer that I drink. It should be the only beer you drink as well. And of course, whatever you have going on this weekend, whether you're going out with friends and family, hitting the pool, hitting the lake, going to a friend's place, going to a bar to watch all the sports, whatever, make sure you drink your Altstadt responsibly. But your good times are made better with the greatness that is Altstadt beer. No impurities, no regrets.
Once again, congratulations to the Lady Horns and their softball team. What a fantastic 2 years they've given the people and the university and themselves.
No doubt. No doubt. What a fun ride this year was. What a fun ride last year was. And
yep,
you feel like they've got a shot to do it again next year.
Dude, back-to-backs are hard.
Back-to-backs are hard, and now the quest for a three-peat begins. But, hey, Texas had a giant target on its back all season long and didn't bother them one bit. They found a way to scale that mountain one more time. I wouldn't bet against the Longhorns. Mike White is back. Tegan Kavan's back. Katie Stewart's back. A bunch of other key members of these last two championship teams will be returning in 2027. So you'll lose a couple of big pieces, no doubt. Reese Atwood, who has been one of the best players in the history of this program. Citlali Gutierrez, who was really good last night and really good all season long to help get Texas to this spot inside the circle.
Is Henry back? Is she back again? Is their lead batter? Is she back?
Who's that?
Henry, the lead-off batter, the left.
Yeah, Caden Henry will be back. So the biggest players, I think there's like five starting seniors who will be gone, or at least five major contributing seniors who will be gone. It's Reese Atwood, it's Ashton Maloney, it's Leanne Good, it's Sit Gutierrez, and Kaya Altmaier. I think that's your list of like the five pretty regular players who are out of eligibility.
Yeah.
But obviously a lot of big names that we did not mention. Vivi Martinez back, Caden Henry back, now Katie Stewart and Tegan Kavan. Vic Hunter will probably be an everyday player next year for Texas. Hannah Wells, the freshman who was great, she's obviously back. JC Nichols, the freshman who started at third, she's back. You know, the Horns will bring in another great recruiting class. You know, they'll bring in another couple of players out of the portal.
Awesome.
They're going to be just fine. And how great would it be if they beat Texas Tech again in the finals next year?
I'm going to savor this one for a while.
I mean, look, you don't care who you play. You three-peat, that's great. But could you imagine if it was Tech again? It's already amazing that it was Tech this time around. It's never happened where we've had a rematch of the final series in the Women's College World Series.
As long as I get to see their coach hiding behind the cage with his face pinned up against there, that with that sad look on his face.
Somebody get that man a cheeseburger. He needs it. I mean, they can't. He's such a whiny baby, too.
I know.
Like, they kept showing. There was a moment on the telecast where, you know, he's the third base coach when Tex batting, just like Mike White is when Texas is batting. And there was like a call that he didn't like, a ball strike call that he didn't like. And he's like bitching to the third base umpire.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's low. It's like, what is she going to do about it?
Nothing.
She's like, she doesn't care what you have to say. She's not calling the game. Go complain to the right guy or shut your trap.
Come on, man.
Fill it with a. You know what? I won't say anything.
Oh, there you go. That's taking the high road.
We're not body shamers on this show.
That we're not.
At least I'm not. I can't speak for yourself.
Okay. Well, don't speak for me because I can get that way sometimes.
You got any Jerry Glasgow jokes then you would like to make?
No, I'm not going to say. I've seen enough of his face way too much for a guy who lost the game.
Yeah, boy, they showed the losing coach a hell of a lot more than they showed the winning coach, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean, I don't need to see either one of them that much, but I definitely don't want to see the losing coach that much.
They showed the losing pitcher a hell of a lot more than they showed the winning pitcher, didn't they?
For sure.
Yeah. Sorry to ESPN that their beloved Texas Tech Red Raiders couldn't get the job done.
Those are the things I like.
My God. I don't know. Maybe whoever's running the camera has a crush on Jerry Glasgow. Who knows? Who knows? By the way, your guy Aaron Judge is out for a while. Did you see this?
Rib issues.
He's going to be reevaluated in 4 to 6 weeks.
They thought that guy would be back playing in 2 weeks.
Dealing with a stress fracture of a rib. So not so great news for your New York Yankees, Buck.
That's right. They got enough hitting. They got enough pitching right now. They're okay.
Yeah. And I've got to give a quick shout out to Auburn Baseball. I have a request for Chris Del Conte. Nobody ever requests anything from him, right? So Auburn is also hosting a Super Regional this weekend. They're the number 4 national seed. They needed a pretty crazy comeback to take down the 4 seed Milwaukee last weekend. But they moved on, and they are hosting Ole Miss in an all-SEC Super. They announced that all weekend long, they will be selling hot dogs for $1.25.
Oh, now you're talking.
And they will be selling domestic beers for $2.50. So, CDC, hey, that's an SEC school. All right, they're hosting as well. Playing for the same thing we're playing for here in Austin. Can we get $1.25 dogs and $2.50 brews, please?
Beans and Franks. Throw some beans in there, too. Come on,
you guys. You guys are about to make a lot of money off softball winning it all. All that extra merch money that you've got some money hanging around now. You got extra income that maybe you weren't expecting to have or you weren't banking on having. Can you hook us up? Hell, you might make more money with how many people are buying the food and drink.
You know what? They may be saving it for football season to go like Coastal Carolina does.
No, they're not doing that.
Well, they're not.
I wish. I'd love for them to offer those prices at a DKR Texas Memorial Stadium. They're not doing that for football. That I know is too big of a request.
Yeah.
Believe me, I would love for them to do that. I'd love for you to be right. But this baseball, hot dogs and beer. They go together with baseball.
Yes, they do. You're right. Get a little special going for the weekend.
I mean, maybe $2 dogs and $4 beers even. Can we get that?
Yeah, our little girl would like that. Our little beer drinking girl would love to have a little special. She may buy the whole row of beers.
Oh, yeah. The official mascot of Bucky and BK.
Yeah. Look at her. Yeah.
Yeah.
She said, "I don't even need those. What do I need with a hot dog?"
How many $2.50 beers would she down? And you're right. The allowance money, she'd buy the entire section.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
A nice cold beer. So just my request for CDC. That's all I've got.
Love those dogs at the ballpark, man.
And real quick, before we get out of here, I have to show this. This is maybe the greatest commitment announcement / video of all time. Got a 3-star offensive lineman by the name of Ethan Lawson. He's from the state of Virginia. He announced that he's committing to West Virginia. Now you've got some kinfolk out there.
Yeah.
Well, when I say West Virginia, what do you think of, Buck? Just the
banjo
state?
Banjo on my knee.
A little Deliverance? Okay, what else? What else comes to mind?
Coal Miner's Daughter.
Okay. I thought you'd have this figured out by now. Anything else?
No.
Not a certain song that you think of?
Mountain Mama, Take Me Home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's, and then, well, I'll just go ahead and show with the sound first. Here is Ethan Walker, a 3-star offensive lineman, announcing that he's committing to West Virginia.
What's up, everybody? I'm here to announce that I'm committing to West Virginia. Go Mountaineers, baby!
Almost heaven, West Virginia.
Yep, that's the campfire that his family will be around for the, you know, they've been around that thing for the whole spring. It just hasn't gone out yet.
It's a burning couch, Buck. There's a couch in there.
Yeah, that's
the bit. That's the West Virginia bit. They're couch burners. And this guy with John Denver playing announces he's committing to West Virginia in front of a burning couch in the woods.
That is awful.
This is awesome. What do you mean awful?
Oh,
this is as good as it gets right here, isn't it?
My sister is a graduate of that place.
That's what's awful right there.
Yes.
You got to be related to a graduate of West Virginia University.
My niece is now there, and my niece goes to school there.
Don't tell people that, sir. But this is, your niece should have done this when she committed to West Virginia.
That would have been great. That would have been great. Look at that couch. Hey, you're not going to be able to replace that. You might as well put it out and put it back in the living room, or at least put it on the porch.
They're not going to be able to replace it?
Oh, no. Put that on the porch. Put that out and put it on the front porch.
Yeah. Yeah. You think that's what he did? Oh, shoot. Yeah. That's the living room couch. Mom didn't say I could do this. She's pissed at me. I got to put this fire out and bring it back home so we could use it.
Oh, my gosh. Those people. You people.
Something else. And that, I mean, I hope that kid is great. I don't root for West Virginia. Obviously, Texas don't have to see him anymore, no longer sharing a conference. But I hope Ethan Lawson turns out to be an NFL player at some point so we can.
Oh, yeah. So he can burn two couches.
Keep burning the couches. And I want to have an excuse to watch that time and time again. It's very good. All right. Well, that will do it for a Friday show. What a fun show. Congrats again to Mike White and the Texas softball team. Tower lighting ceremony tonight, 7 o'clock. Can you guess where it's going to happen? I'll tell you, at the tower on campus. And Buck and I will be back on Monday to recap the NBA Finals Game 2, some Stanley Cup Final, Texas baseball. We've got a lot going on. But we appreciate you guys spending some of your Fridays with us. Great show to you, my man.
You be safe out there this weekend, BK.
Same to you, my friend. And y'all do the same. Thank y'all for tuning in, and we will talk to y'all on Monday.
Welcome.
Welcome.